And now, concluding our program today, Movie Moles Fran Michelle and Joe Clement give us their take on Star Trek Into Darkness. Movie Moles have asked me to tell you that there may be spoilers. But let's be honest, you probably will have forgotten them by the time you get to the theater. So now, let's boldly go where no reviewers have gone before.
Space, a final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Good morning. This is Fran Michelle here with Joe Clement to discuss Star Trek Into Darkness, the second film in the rebooted Star Trek franchise directed by J.J. Abrams. We will be giving away plot points. Spoiler warning, spoiler warning, spoiler warning. The film features Benedict Cumberbatch as Khan, a genetically engineered superhuman, secretly enlisted by Admiral Marcus to design ships and weapons for the as-yet-unstarted war between the Federation and the Klingon Empire, which Marcus wants to strike preemptively. Khan, however, has escaped and begun to engage in acts of terrorism against the Federation, so Marcus sends the Enterprise on a covert mission to kill him, armed with 72 prototype torpedoes. Logical Spock persuades passionate Captain Kirk to capture rather than kill Khan and bring him back to Earth for a fair trial. And Khan gives Kirk information that leads to the discovery that the torpedoes contain Khan's crewmates in cryogenic stasis, and that a secret shipyard behind Jupiter holds a massive warship, the Vengeance, despite the Federation's officially peaceful policies. Angry that Khan has not been killed, Marcus, in the dreadnought Vengeance, pursues the Enterprise, but Kirk and Khan sneak aboard and take the bridge, where Khan turns on Kirk and kills Marcus. But the Enterprise crew have removed the cryotubes and armed the torpedoes, so they fire on the Vengeance and keep the frozen crew. Kirk saves the Enterprise from crashing to Earth by exposing himself to fatal radiation while realigning the warp core. And meanwhile, the Vengeance plows into downtown San Francisco. Khan survives this, and his super blood is used to reanimate the dead Kirk, while Khan himself is refrozen. Kirk gives a speech about the importance of not becoming like one's enemies by seeking revenge, and the Enterprise goes off to its five-year mission. The film ends with a title card dedicating it to post-9/11 veterans. So this is the 12th film in the Star Trek franchise. What makes this such an appealing universe for fans?
Well, the original Star Trek series came out at a time when the civil rights movement was really hot, when people's agitation against injustices in the world was pretty hot, and where the question of the future, because of the space race being hot as well, all came together, I think, to create a condition where people were ready to think about what the future is really going to be like. And Gene Roddenberry created Star Trek to be much more than just a TV show. I think that Star Trek has always been kind of a very self-consciously, even politically motivated experiment in futurology that tried to make a lot of science fiction possibilities accessible to people while also being, you know, fun.
And it was egalitarian in its, to some extent, in its presentation of race. At least it was integrated, which in 1966, not too many shows were, I think. So there was Uhura, and there was Sulu at the helm. And so we had characters of color who were in significant roles. They were not the leads. They were not the captain. But they had major roles. So there was an attempt at that kind of egalitarianism and integration.
And at the same time, I think that it might be saying a bit much to say that they had really major roles. Uhura, you know, was on the bridge, and yet she was essentially a 23rd century receptionist.
Yes.
for the spaceship. This is not to downplay the fact that it seemed immense that they were on screen, but to kind of think of how do we look at historical representations of people from oppressed backgrounds and assess whether they are getting fair treatment or not.
Exactly. And that's sort of the question with, or that's related to the question about the casting of Khan in this film, in Star Trek Into Darkness, because it was originally a role played by Ricardo Montalban, a Mexican actor, character of color, and it's been recast with a white actor. So on the one hand, it's whitewashing. He's not there anymore. and he was one of the more complex, interesting, appealing villains in Star Trek. On the other hand, well, having people of color playing the villains is not necessarily the greatest thing in the world either. So at least we have a sense in this film that, yeah, the white guys are doing some bad stuff. So there's that as well. I mean, on the one hand, you have the question of any representation, at least actors of color are getting work. I mean, at the most basic material level, there's that. And they're certainly not central characters. As you say, Uhura, she's a receptionist. Sulu's the chauffeur. I don't know. But they're there more than they were in a lot of other shows in the 1960s. And I guess Star Trek, the original series, had the first interracial kiss on television. It was choreographed by aliens as part of some torturous process.
They didn't want to do it.
They didn't want to do it, but still, they did it. You know, and it was on television. So they made some efforts in that direction, and I think it's worth acknowledging that, even though clearly it did not go. I mean, Uhura was not captaining the ship, and she was wearing those very, very short skirts. All the women were in the little mini skirts, which seems like impractical wear for outer space. I don't know. And this film too, although it has, you know, female science officers and female officers in Starfleet, it does not pass the Bechdel test, in which you have to have at least two named female characters who talk to each other about something other than a man. The women in this film do not talk to each other at any point, and there's only a couple of them, really. And then, of course, there's the scene in which Carol Marcus disrobes for no... I can't even remember when in the film she does that, which is, I think, an indication of how completely gratuitous it is. She looks good in her 23rd century underwear, which looks a lot like 21st century underwear.
And we still have the male gaze.
So there are attempts at egalitarianism, but it's not quite as progressive as it would like to be, or as it might be, or as it should be.
Then you fast forward to Into Darkness, and the principal bad guy is a military admiral who has run amok. It's not even very clear why he wants to start a war with the Klingons, other than at this point in Federation history, nobody likes the Klingons.
Well, they're violent, you know. They have tempers.
Right.
those Klingons, they have violent tempers. I mean, that's one of the things about the representation of aliens on Star Trek, as in much science fiction, that alien species are coded in terms of particular races or characteristics of people on Earth. And so they become very sort of homogenized and stereotypical. So
it's interesting to look at the series as a whole, but especially the kind of core Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and even Voyager iterations in terms of Samuel Huntington's Clash of Civilizations, because the way that intelligent hominoid races arise on planets leads to these very unified, homogenous cultures that have very kind of characteristic things that people can, you know, refer to at a glance, in the way that, you know, 50, 100 years ago, we might have referred to the typical things to expect of Irish people or people from Africa or Chinamen.
Star Trek also promised this united planet, and we're all in this together. We've overcome Cold War divisions. It is also, of course, the captain is an American white guy, and the famous phrase about their mission is that they are pursuing the final frontier. And so it reflects American sense of mission and manifest destiny and controlling the world. So it is this kind of imperialist mission, even though then that's countered, or supposedly countered, by the prime directive of Starfleet, which is that they are not supposed to interfere with other cultures. So it's sort of supposed to be a kind of check on the imperialism suggested by the final frontier. And yet, Kirk and the Enterprise, they're constantly violating the prime directive. And in Star Trek Into Darkness, the first scene is about them violating the prime directive in order to save these people by stopping the volcano from erupting so that they don't all get washed away. So they break the rules, but it's really to be helpful. This film is I guess, one of the only ones in which one of a very few, or maybe the only instance in which Kirk gets called on the carpet for having violated the prime directive. And usually he gets away with it. It's just, you know, it was the right thing to do, even though he wasn't following the rules.
And he gets away with it because one thing that figures prominently in this movie, as one reviewer put it, is Badmirals. There is this very in-crowd that protects their own. Kirk got into Starfleet because he had these connections through Admiral Pike, and Pike again has come through to, you know, make sure that he got a second chance, which, you know, maybe we can see in terms of the story that he deserves. But when we think about how this is representing power in an ostensibly, you know, transparent egalitarian society, it raises questions that I think we should be asking, which is what's great about Star Trek, actually. It's not just a vision of society perfected. I think that we have to keep in mind Ursula K. Le Guin's introduction to The Left-Handed Darkness, where she talks about how science fiction at its best is really a thought experiment about what we have at present. And that what Star Trek does is it brings our best and arguably some of our worst, masquerading as our best, into full view for us to actually consider.
And this film, the Star Trek Into Darkness, does that in some fairly explicit ways with some fairly obvious evocations of the current war on terrorism and the era of post 9/11. So when the Vengeance ship goes crashing through San Francisco, there are these billowing clouds of gray smoke that reflect, you know, what you would have seen when the plane landed at the Pentagon or crashed into the Twin Towers in New York. So there is this resonance there.
And then you have Simon Pegg's character Scotty, who at one point, you know, takes this very noble stand against just following orders when he knows that his orders, which are to simply allow these torpedoes to be loaded onto the Enterprise, when he knows these orders are against the rules and they're just generally, from a practical standpoint, a bad idea. He wants to inspect them, make sure they're not dangerous. And there is this very, I think, intentional message being put off there that corrupt governments will just try and push their workers along to get them to cooperate, and that the real heroes are those workers, those everyday people who say no.
Yeah, there's that sort of anti-bureaucratic dimension to the film. And clearly the worst villain here is Admiral Marcus, is this figure who's very high up in Starfleet, who has a lot of power, and is plotting to start a war with the Klingons. Perhaps because he thinks it's coming anyway. It's sort of a preemptive thing, a la Cheney Bush, that we have to go get them before they get us because they're about to attack us. He's clearly not represented in, I don't think there's anything positive about his representation as a character. And there are explicit messages in the film about the dangers of seeking revenge and the problem of simply going in and assassinating somebody you believe to have done you harm, and speeches in favor of the value of pursuit of law and putting people on trial if they've done something wrong and not having the death penalty. And yet this terrorist figure is somewhat sympathetic insofar as he has been wronged by Marcus. He's been used. He's been exploited. His comrades have been taken away from him. He thinks they may all be dead. So we have some sympathy for him, although he goes on to do some things that lose that sympathy completely. And yet, because the film is dedicated to the veterans of the post 9/11 era, and because I think a lot of the charge of the film comes from watching things explode, it's kind of a mixed message. And also nothing, I mean, Marcus dies, he's killed by Khan, but he's not, there's no inspection of Starfleet or discussion of how we can keep this sort of thing from happening again. He's sort of a rogue general commander, and yet there's no attempt to make sure that someone else can't do that too.
No, and that just underscores one of the differences between this movie and the original series or the majority of Star Trek, is that There's not the same kind of accountability structures. In a couple of the original movies, there was, you know, explicit references to court-martials, and the law and trials themselves are a recurring kind of trope in story construction in Star Trek. But in this new movie, it's all about the good old boys.
Yeah, we never see Khan go on trial. Apparently, they decide to just refreeze him. Although he's been brought back to Earth ostensibly so that he can be brought to justice, the only justice we see him getting is, there he is, he's frozen again. So although he's not executed, he's not really living anymore, And it's not clear how that came about. So it's clearly not centered on questions of legality and justice and law, despite its pronouncements to the contrary.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. But it would be fun to come back to and periodically explore some of the more radical visions that Star Trek has thrown out. There's a great Union episode in the Deep Space Nine series. There is a radical interrogation of exploitative economics in the original series. And these are some of the things that really make Star Trek worth, you know, putting some time into.
The vast universe of Star Trek.
For the Old Mole Variety Hour, this has been Joe Clement and Fran Michel talking about Star Trek Into Darkness.